This is call the Water Committee in session this morning. This is February 20th, 2003. We have basically two items on our agenda for today. And we're going to start out with opening a public hearing on House Bill 2247. Do we have...
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2247 modifies fee structure for certificates of number and registrations for boats, increases fees for titles, duplicate certificates of number and registrations, title transfers, and duplicate validation stickers. This takes effect, if passed, November 1, 2003, and has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay. And we have quite a list of folks here this morning to testify. We're going to start out with the Marine Board first in this, and then we'll go in order after that. Is it Paul Don Hefner? Good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Paul Don Hefner, Director of the Marine Board. The 2001 legislature directed the Marine Board to study and review its registration and title fee structure. They directed us to form a working group to determine possible changes in the current fee structure that would support programs at a prudent and reasonable level. We incorporated that budget note in the review as a part of the process of developing our 2003-2005 budget. Last spring, we held five budget meetings around the state with stakeholders and interest groups to present the various revenue and expenditure options facing the agency as we develop the current budget. The working group consisted of representatives from a variety of user groups and stakeholders. It included the Association of Northwest Steelheaders, Columbia River Yachting Association, the Oregon State Sheriff's Association, Oregon Parks Association, the Oregon Public Ports Association, Coast Guard Auxiliary, Power Squadrons, Boat Dealers, Fishing Groups, Guides, and others. Out of the workshops and the working group, we developed six options to consider for our fees. They included the option of no increase, as well as various alternatives that included across-the-board increases, tiered increases, and a flat fee option. As we began work with that group, it became apparent very quickly that there was an inherent unfairness in the current tiered system, which is tiered by length. Boats of different length are charged different rates depending on the tier they fall into and their size within the tier. The current per-foot rates are not consistent across the board. The consensus of the working group was to modify that current tiered system and replace it with a flat per-foot charge of $3 per foot for 2 years, or $1.50 per foot per year. The working group also recommended adjustments to title fees and duplicate fees to make those more comparable with current motor vehicle title fees. With the changes proposed by the working group, Oregon's registration fees would be comparable to neighboring states such as Idaho and Nevada. They'd still be significantly less than the fees charged in California and Washington, which include personal property taxes, excise taxes, and sales taxes. I believe that your staff has given you a copy of the report which we presented to the Legislative Emergency Board in October of last year, detailing the work of the working group, the various options, and the recommendations of that working group. That became the basis for House Bill 2447 that is before you today. Our 2003-2005 budget depends on the fee bill to restore roughly $1.3 million in cuts to existing law enforcement facility and safety program levels. The bill would also allow us to restore the facility grant funding to its 1997-99 level. It's been cut several times over the last two biennia. and it would also allow for implementation of the highest priority needs in a statewide law enforcement review and study, which we were also directed to do by Ways and Means during last legislative session. We had our budget hearing 2 weeks ago at Ways and Means Subcommittee on Natural Resources, and that subcommittee expressed interest in reviewing the fee changes that are contained within this bill. Our agency is funded entirely by user fees. We receive absolutely no general fund. It's entirely user fees and some federal user fees as well. Most of our fees are returned to the local level in the form of marine law enforcement and boating facility improvement at the local level. Over 85% of all that money is returned to where it comes from. The proposed fee of $3 a foot is much fairer, we believe, than the current tiered system. Everyone will be paying the same per foot cost. We think this is simpler and much more fair. Without the fees, it's clear that funding for facilities enforcement safety programs will be reduced. And out of the budget meetings, we heard from voters, local partners, and other stakeholders that was unacceptable. And so they support this. I believe we have brought together a broad consensus of various stakeholders and user groups in support of this increase, and attached to my testimony are copies of letters from groups such as the Northwest Steelheaders Association, the Columbia River Yachting Association, which represents all of the major boat and yachting clubs in the Portland metropolitan area, the Bass Anglers Sportsman's Society, or BASS, which is the federation in Oregon that includes many local chapters of bass clubs around the state that are avid users of our facilities, and they're in support of it. Other local fishing and boating clubs have supported it, as well as the Oregon Parks Association, the Oregon State Sheriff's Association, individual county sheriffs, parks departments, Portland marine dealers, and some manufacturers and others. So we think we've assembled a package here that has a broad base of support. We would request your favorable consideration of this bill and a due pass recommendation with a referral to Ways and Means. I'd be happy to answer any questions that the committee might have.
Thank you, Paul. Any questions?
Representative, Mr. Chair, thank you. Good morning, Chair. Thanks for coming. As you know, some folks, myself included, wanted to attach the rebate to get these pollutant two strokes off the water. I will be supporting your fee today, increase today, but I would like to, in the future, when times are better and when we have more money, try to significantly increase the rate by which these engines are being removed off the water. I know there's, by 2006, as according to yourself, too, that they can't be sold anymore. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schaffer, the Environmental Protection Agency has regulated outboard engines, and by 2006, all engines sold have to be compliant with EPA standards, which will reduce emissions by 75%. Currently, most of the engines being sold today already meet the 2006 standard. So the industry and dealers are well ahead of the EPA phase-in for that clean engine technology.
Can I follow up on that? I have a garage full of two-stroke engines. They're great engines, and they run forever. And I've then had the opportunity, and I might add the pleasure, to be out on a boat fishing and operated those kinds. I don't have one of those. I don't have a boat. My wife wouldn't let me have one. But
too bad.
Yeah, it is. It's a shame. I would, in all seriousness, I'm not happy with the rate they're being taken off the water, and I know I can't get everything on the one around here, but I would like to see something, some way to increase the rate of us, significantly increase the rate by which these engines are being taken off the water, because I can see with my own eyes the pollution that they spill out onto the waterways, and that's not, even if it is diluted eventually, that's not a good thing in my opinion, and I just wanted to express that here today. But I will support this fee increase, and I want to thank you for your good work. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Cook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Paul, a couple of questions. This is a 20% increase over the 01-03 budget, correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Krupp, that is correct. The overall agency budget goes up by 20% with the fee increase. Some of that is also federal funds through the Boating Infrastructure Grant Program, where Oregon was very successful during the last couple of years in capturing federal aid that, unfortunately, is limited to facility projects that only serve a very small class of boats.
And as you and I talked about previously, those federal dollars can only go for the construction of those facilities. It doesn't help you in terms of personnel issues, that kind of thing. Why haven't we granted you an increase in the 01-03 session? You know, this is a pretty big jump, 20% in one session. Why did the legislature not grant you an increase last session? Did you come with a fee package or a general fund increase or other funds increase?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Krupp, through the 90s, we had significant growth in registrations, which was able to essentially inflation-proof our budget with growth in numbers, growth in gas tax, and federal funds. But as we reached the late 90s, registrations flattened out, revenue essentially flattened out, but the cost of maintaining programs, especially law enforcement, continued to increase. As well, there were some expansions to help fund the state police. Those increases came at the expense of the facilities program, and so we were cannibalizing one program, in a sense, to maintain levels of law enforcement and other programs. That became very apparent through Ways and Means last session. We did not bring a fee package last time. We thought we were still all right, but I believe the Ways and Means Subcommittee last year saw what was happening with the meeting the crossroads between revenues and expenditures here and not being able to sustain law enforcement and other programs without really decimating facilities. And out of that came the budget note that said it's time to look at a fee increase.
And Mr. Chair, if I may. Your FTE has remained relatively stagnant for some time, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And Mr. Chair?
Paula?
We have a problem, obviously, that we're trying to overcome in this state in dealing with the public employees retirement system. How much has the public employees retirement system eroded your dollars, and is that a big contributor to having to cannibalize your facilities program to keep the dollars you've had to backfill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Krupp, I don't have an exact dollar figure for you. Those are rolled up into personnel costs, as you know, as a part of the agency budget, and any costs that are rolled up there without additional resources do come out of program, because when adjustments are made to for salaries, other funded agencies such as mine don't receive any increase in revenues. We receive perhaps an increase in limitation, but limitation without revenue doesn't do you any good. And so essentially it does come out of program.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I have another question. Thank you.
Sir, in your opinion, the people that are going to be paying these fees, the people whose pockets this money is going to be coming out of, the voters, would you say that they support this increase and what you plan to do with this money or not?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schaffer, the organized groups that we are able to contact, because we can't contact all 197,000 customers, but through the organized groups that we have been able to contact, notably groups such as the Columbia River Yachting Association, which has thousands of members within it, represents all of the major clubs in the Portland area, the people that really, the larger boats that are going to pay significantly more under this, they support it.
And I believe the reason that most people will support this is that they appreciate the work that's done by our agency to improve boating facilities around the state, the quality of access that we try to provide them, the marine law enforcement services, the sheriff's patrols that are out on the water, ensuring their safety. I think by and large, people have come to appreciate those things and don't want to see them go away or reduced.
Thank you.
I know Representative Dinkelder is.
Sorry. I'm having a little mini coffee.
She's in conference too.
My other purple committee member. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have a follow-up question to what my colleague, Representative Schaffler, alluded to regarding the two-stroke engines, and I appreciate you providing the fact sheet and the information, and we've discussed this. Actually, I thought this was very well written and have some good information in here. I'm assuming this is provided by your agency. The fact sheet says Oregon State Marine Board that I got off the web, and I just wanted to emphasize that I actually, and I know that last session, you know, there was a compromise that was worked out on the rebate bill, and we've had quite a bit of discussion about it, but I just wanted to emphasize that reading through your MOU that you have with the EPA and with the dealers, I think the rebate program is an excellent way to achieve that. And I do share some of the same concerns that Representative Schaffler mentioned about the longevity of these engines, that, you know, they are being phased out in the sale. But I encourage you to do everything that you can through education and outreach to help expedite basically the phase out of these engines, because as Representative Schaffler said, a lot of people have these engines and, you know, can use them for up to 20-25 years. So whatever we can do, I think, to encourage the phase out of those, I certainly would appreciate if your agency looks into that and possibly even earmark some funding as part of your education outreach program to do that. Certainly my preference is that we look at a rebate program, and I hope that we can have some discussions about that down the road.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dinkfelder, we do plan additional outreach as a part of our 0305 budget. We've identified a package there to address safe and sustainable boating to include the two-stroke issue, but there are other environmental issues that face boating as well, such as aquatic nuisance species, the spread of mitten crabs and weeds and other nasty critters that we don't want to get into Oregon waters, and that's a large education outreach effort that we want to do too, as well as trying to promote best practices for boaters, because there's other issues such as the materials people use to wash their boats with and clean their boats with, and discharge of bilge water and discharge of human waste and other things that there are best management practices for that, and we intend to do everything we can to educate voters about those best practices.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Cruz.
Well, surrounded here, but that's okay. I I appreciate from Paul, you're mentioning outreach on invasive species and things like that, which I think are a far more critical issue in this state than this. I remember the two-stroke bill from last session, and we had full hearings on it, and my opinion then is my opinion now. It hasn't changed. I think it's a solution in search of a problem. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other questions? Seems the two-stroke engine has had a reasonably diverse discussion this morning, so we'll move on then with and ask Shane Jackson and Brian Carroll, if you could both maybe come up to the. And at the same time, we'll start off with Mr. Jackson. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for this chance to comment on this. When I came in the room today, and actually while I was driving down to Salem today, I was wondering what I was going to say, and I was wondering whether I was going to mark down whether I was going to be for this fee increase or against this fee increase. Unfortunately, you had a neutral box, so I put my name in the neutral box because I do support this fee increase. As a boater, as a person who recreates on the water all the time, as a person who uses the docks, as a person who supports the law enforcement on our waterways, I feel that this is a sorely needed increase. My one caveat, though, is that this does not fulfill an opportunity that we haven't had for 10 years, an opportunity we might not have for many more years, and that is to put together a program where we can get the carbureted two-stroke engines off the water. Through lots of research and communications with our people, with conferring with the Marine Manufacturers Association, conferring with different organizations around the state. Last session, we came to a conclusion that the best way to pay for and find a way to get the carbureted two-stroke engines off the water was through a apportionment out of the fee increase. I was very sorry to see that we were not part of that fee increase this time, but I don't think that should hold this fee increase back. We should move forward and pass this bill. Unfortunately, I would like to clarify two things from Director Don Hefner's statements, though. He's done a great job putting out information of education through the website. The Memorandum of Understanding is a big leap, and the content of environmental education on the Marine website has been significantly increased over the last 4 years, and I'm very glad to see that. Mr. Don Hefner also said that all engines being sold in the state are meeting the 2006 guideline. That is only true for new engines, only the new engines. There's a huge secondary market in used carbureted two-stroke engines and used watercraft, and these are primarily carbureted two-strokes, which is 75% of the boats on the water. In Oregon City, I think it's Oregon City Marine, does half their business in used engines. So, but they also happen to be the largest four-stroke seller in the on the West Coast. So that's about all I have to say now. Would you care to any questions?
Any questions? Thank you very much, Beard. And, Brian?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Brian Carroll. I'm here today representing the Oregon Parks Association. We are a group of parks and recreation facilities providers and one of the major providers of boating access in the state. And in the last legislative session, I was in the uncomfortable position of being before the Ways and Means Committee Subcommittee about the Marine Board's budget at that time, and we were really the facilities program that was being cannibalized that Mr. Don Hefner mentioned earlier. And the committee put a budget note in the Marine Board's budget to study a fee increase. We were very pleased to see that, and the way Mr. Don Hefner and the Marine Board approached that that study was very good. They brought the stakeholders together. We had a very satisfying discussion of all of the issues around the state. I attended some of those meetings, and what I was pleased to see was the support from the law enforcement side, the facility side, and from the boat themselves to support the idea of fee increase to expand the facilities and bring the facilities budget back to current service level and to also basically keep the law enforcement program harmless and try to keep those current service levels up. One of the things I think that is important to note about this fee increase is basically what it would do is bring us back to current service level. The facilities program has taken a lot of hits over the last several sessions, and our facilities are in decline. And that is a safety issue from the provider's standpoint, and it makes it difficult for us to keep things going and getting the boaters on and off the water safely and efficiently. So we would like to support the bill that's before you today, and certainly any questions I can answer, please feel free.
Question?
Mr. Chair? Thank you. Brian, good to see you, as always.
Thank you.
Brian's from the county that I still have my farm in and represent a good portion of, and does a good job for them. You mentioned bringing back to current service level. We're kind of currently engaged in a budgeting process that doesn't really do current service level budgeting anymore, obviously based on the circumstances we're in. If we, by fees, bring this agency back to current service level, it kind of creates a bit of an inequity with the governor, and I'm not sure how he's willing to look at that overall in the budgetary process. What really happens to Linn County if this fee bill doesn't pass and things stay status quo?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Krupp, in our county, what it basically means is that some of the facilities on Foster Reservoir that we are currently working on and Green Peter Reservoir to improve those facilities and to actually, for instance, Gedney Creek Boat Ramp, which is a ramp that currently has an asphalt surface that's it doesn't meet current standards. It doesn't get people off the water efficiently. We have up to an hour to an hour and a half wait on some of our ramps on Foster Reservoir. That particular boat ramp is slated for improvements, and I suspect if we don't see this fee increase, looking back at what it means to the Marine Board, the facilities program would receive a cut that would probably not permit those kind of improvements to go ahead. And I should probably clarify that when we say current service level, since the Marine Board's budget has been cut or the facilities program has been cut over the past several sessions, this would actually bring the facilities program back to the 97, I believe it's the 97-98 levels. So it really doesn't, through the cuts that they've received, it would bring it back to the current service level for the last biennium, but not necessarily bring it all the way up to where it probably would be inflation-wise, or it would just bring it to the 97-98 level, which was probably the peak at that time.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I have a question, and maybe Mr. Don Hefner may want to, with the Chair's indulgence, answer this too. But now that the Governor has been brought up, do you or anybody have any idea where the Governor is on this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schaffler, that I probably am not the appropriate person to discuss that.
Neither am I. Chair, forgive me.
Yes, again for the record.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, Paul Don Hefner, Director of the Marine Board, to that question, this bill was pre-session filed by the governor and is incorporated as a part of the governor's balanced budget for our agency.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
And next we have the Northwest Sports Fishermen and Northwest Steelheaders, Trey and Bill. Good morning.
Good morning. Nice to see you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Trey Karsked, and I'm a resident of Tualatin, Oregon. I'm a fifth-generation Oregonian. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of this bill. My full testimony has been provided in letters submitted by the Marine Board to this committee, so I'll be very brief. I'm here today representing Alumwa Boats, the largest aluminum boat manufacturer in the state and, for that matter, in the nation. Stevens Marine, the largest marine dealer in the state. Smoker Craft Boats, one of the largest boat builders in the country, with a plant just east of here in Staten. River Marine of Oregon, which is a small dealer down in the Medford area. The Portland Marine Dealers Association and the Northwest Sport Fishing Industry Association, for whom I serve as a board member. collectively and separately, we're certainly in that group that has the most to lose or gain with these decisions. And I come here today to personally voice our support of the proposed fee increase. Our support is unconditional. I had the opportunity to participate in the department's budget discussions this past year. I understand the challenges. I found the budget reviews open, thorough, proactive, and productive. In our view, the Oregon State Marine Board is an exemplary agency. They provide an uncommonly high return on the investment. They enhance our customers' boating experience in more ways than there's time to recount, and in many respects are a model for other states to follow. In my more than 20 years in the marine industry, I count myself lucky to enjoy the kind of support and service the Marine Board serves up daily. The fees under consideration are reasonable. They're less than our neighboring states. They provide the impetus, we believe, to grow our businesses and provide the needed infrastructures for safe and sustainable boating in Oregon. In our view, these are essential increases that, if not approved, will profoundly and negatively impact our businesses. As you know, the Marine Board is entirely user-funded, and thanks to the Marine Board, Oregon boaters have high standards related to facilities, information access, and responsiveness. If boaters like myself have to pay a little more for maintained launches, properly maintained and safe dock facilities, clean bathrooms, certification programs that ensure my safety, enforcement that assures compliance, and a long list of other attributes, we're okay with it, given the alternative, which will erode our boating experience and surely drive people away from boating. Boating in Oregon is a billion-dollar industry that provides direct and indirect employment for 25,000 Oregonians that supports several sectors of our economy and communities from one end of the state to the other. I'm happy to take time out of my day to support this agency. It's good for Oregon, it's good for our industry, and it's good for the more than 190,000 people in this state that are registered boaters. Again, we are in full and unconditional support of this increase. I thank you for your consideration. I appreciate the opportunity to testify here.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Yeah. Representative Cruz.
Yeah. So could I assume, if I was to call Brian Brush down at North River, that he'd say similar things to what you're saying?
Brian serves on the board with me with the Northwest Sport Fishing Industries Association, and I'm here on their behalf. And yes, I believe he would.
Okay. I do coffee with him mornings, and, you know, I want to make life bearable when I get back home.
Brian, Representative Cruz, is a great competitor.
Another question?
Phil. Mr. Chair, thank you. Phil Donovan here on behalf of the Association of Northwest Steelheaders. We have 17 chapters located around the state and over 2,000 members. Here in support of House Bill 2247, you've received a written testimony. Just to summarize, you know, we hear a lot of folks who complain about boat launches that are in disrepair as a result of high water events, picking up concrete and moving it around and turning it into a mess. You see docks that are half floating in the water. And most people's response is, the dang county isn't getting this thing fixed. Well, the problem is that the Dan County relies on these Oregon Marine Board grants to keep those facilities in good shape, and it compromises the safety of the boating experience, both to get in and get out of the water. So the funding that would and the revenue that would come about with this, we believe, would both help promote boating and also generate much-needed economic activity around the state. I think that's an important facet of what this helps do. And last evening, I had an opportunity to speak to the Salem chapter of the Northwest Steelheaders, and this budget was brought up by an individual who was wondering about how some of the different calculations were made. And I was pleased to hear a couple of the old-timers jump forward and already say, well, they're going to simplify that, and they're going to make it just $3 a foot, and we can figure out how much we got to pay. What the process had been in the past was inane, and the tiered system wasn't well understood. In closing, I just want to also address the question that Representative Krupp brought up with regards to, you know, the size of this increase, and I want to make it clear that the Oregon Marine Board brought forth a host of different revenue options, and the stakeholders to a T said, look,
We want to get this agency back on track. We want to address the backlog of problems that are out there. We want really what costs the most but raises the most revenue and get that out in the field. And we've heard repeatedly about how good this agency is about its grant program and getting those monies out in the field and not creating a wrath of bureaucracy. And that's unusual, and it should be encouraged. So with that, I will close my testimony. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you, Phil. Is there questions for Mr. Donovan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. That's all I have signed up for this particular bill. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify on House Bill 2247? If not, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2247 and open a work session on House Bill 2247.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kurtz.
I move House Bill 2247 be passed to the Committee on Ways and Means, or be sent to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Cruz moves House Bill 2247 be sent to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Comments or discussion? Representative Dingell.
Thank you.
You're leaning forward to your mic with a
very astute observation. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for the record, I would like to say that based on a couple of conversations we've had up here about the two-stroke engine, that I would like to see some movement towards addressing this issue. And hopefully, I know we're not going to address it here today in this bill, but hopefully we'll see some other proposals coming in front of us, and hopefully we will have the cooperation of the Marine Board on that. So I will be supporting this fee bill today here in committee, but I would certainly like to see some efforts towards ideally some type of rebate or program that can help expedite the transition to cleaner four-stroke engines. And certainly I would like to see if we can move something this session before this bill comes to a vote on the floor.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Other Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You saw me leaning forward too, didn't you? I echo Representative Dingfelder's concerns. I also have those concerns. I'm very much in support of the raising in fees. Some years ago, I was in Europe, and I was there for 2 months, and I hadn't spoken for several weeks with anyone who spoke English, and I saw a sailboat on the island of Rhodes that had Portland, Oregon on it. I was so excited, and I ran down there because I was going to be speaking to an Oregonian. Actually, they were from Israel, and they had registered their boat in Oregon because it was so cheap to register here. And I thought, oh, there is something I want to see about. So I have no problem with raising these fees. It's a user fee, and I'm very much in support of that. But I do share, I also live on the river. Some of you know I live on the Willamette River, and we do boat, and I do see the pollution that goes into the rivers from two-stroke engines, and I'm also concerned about that and share Representative Dingfelder's concerns. And I think it's up to the Marine Board to do a better education so that folks know that when they're using these two-stroke engines that it is polluting the waterways that all of us hold so near and dear. So I will be voting in support of this, but I do share Representative Dingfelder's concerns.
Other discussion.
Nah, no point. Let's vote.
I gather somebody's trying to get Representative Cruz to
I guess I'm leaning
position.
Forward.
If I could ask Don to come back just a minute, Representative Tomei brought up an interesting question.
What's this doing to our balance of trade is my question. If we're no longer getting money from Israel because we're doing this.
Do you have any history, do you have any figures on the number of boats registered in Oregon with out-of-state ownership?
No, we got a PO box or something.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, to address that question, federal law under which the boat numbering system is established through the Coast Guard requires that a boat be registered in its state of principal use. And a person has to certify that Oregon is, their, in fact, their state of principal use. Now, many boats, and I believe that the boat that Representative Tomei may have been referring to, are documented vessels. And documentation is not done by the state, it's done by the Coast Guard. It's generally for larger boats, and it allows people to claim a port of call, if you will. So if they had a relative in Portland or some such thing, they could go through Coast Guard documentation. At some point, the boat may have actually, you know, been from Oregon and was sold and traded, but Oregon was its home port, and that's a documentation issue. It's not something that our agency is involved with those larger vessels that are documented.
Okay. So there's not necessarily a cottage industry around registration like there is with RVs?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cruz, there may be some people that are creative about trying to, you know, use Oregon as a place to register. I know for a number of years, people in California thought they were pulling a fast one if they try to register up here. But we'd turn, you know, if they have a California address, we'd turn those over to the California Board of Equalization, and we'd get a nice thank you note from them every once in a while about the, you know, $250,000 or $500,000 in property taxes that they collected from those tax cheats. So,
but no rebate.
No rebate. Yeah. No. But I don't think there's widespread abuse of that.
Did you want to make a comment on it?
My name is Shane Jackson, representing SCOW. In my 5 years as an international mariner, Wilmington, Delaware, made quite a nice, Delaware made a lot of money out of registering boats because they have very low registration fees. And there were a few vessels that did register in Portland, Oregon, but they do fall under the guidelines that Mr. Don Hefner detailed earlier.
Thank you. Any other discussion on this? Staff would call the roll, please.
Representative Flores?
Excused.
Representative Cruz?
Aye.
Representative Schaffler?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative Dingfelder?
Aye.
Representative Krupp?
Excused.
Chair Jensen?
Aye.
Having received a majority vote, House Bill 2247 is referred to the Committee on Ways and Means with a two-pass recommendation. At this point, we would open a public hearing on House Bill 2268.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2268 modifies fees collected by Water Resources Department, specifies how department may expend monies received from certain fees deposited into Water Resource Department's operating fund, declares an emergency and effective date. The fiscal office has requested that this bill be referred to Ways and Means. It was not subsequently referred.
Okay. What are we saying with that?
In other words, this is not, Mr. Chair, it has not been, it does not have a subsequent referral by the House Speaker, but it has had a request that it has a fiscal thing in it, so they have requested that it be referred to them.
Yeah, we wouldn't do that. We're going to hold a second on the department. And we have Roger Powell from Bend and Bob Patterson from Pendleton. And since they have come the greater distance, we would like to hear their testimony first. Are they here, please? Would you please?
Good. Good morning, gentlemen.
Oglethorpe Easter Creek.
Roger, would you like to lead off?
Sure. Good morning. My name is Roger Prowl from City of Bend, and I'm also happy to report that it was snowing hard on the pass this morning, which for a water guy is a good thing.
That's good. We like to hear those sort of stories. People around here think I'm a very strange person when I'm grumpy and on the nice sunshiny days and I'm smiling.
You're never grumpy.
Thank you. Would you go ahead, please?
The City of Bend supports House Bill 2268, which increases fees charged by the Oregon Water Resources Department for an array of water right services. The City of Bend has pending water rights applications before the Water Resources Department, and these water permits are crucial to the well-being of our community. Water is the fundamental and absolute necessary resource for economic activity. As the state of Oregon population grows, water resources must be reallocated for our society to function in a smooth and rational manner. Society is putting pressure on our natural resources, and sound management is critical for the long-term sustainable view. The Water Resources Department is faced with an ever-increasing workload as municipalities, irrigators, and industrial users try to make better and more efficient use of existing rights. The conservation ethic in our state is alive and strong, and all users and purveyors of water need to address conservation and look decades into the future so we can have wise planning. The Water Resources Department has thousands of water rights applications, transfers, permit, certifications, and amendments moving through the complicated water law environment. A considerable amount of the pending paperwork will actually help rivers return to a more natural hydrograph and are conservation-oriented. This is especially true in the Deschutes Basin, where novel mitigation and water banking concepts are being implemented. Most basins in Oregon are trying to find new ways to meet mounting municipal and industrial needs while keeping the very important agricultural community whole. Another very important reason to support these fee increases is the protection of public health through the inspection of well construction activities. Some of these fee increases will fund well inspectors. Improper well construction can lead to contamination of drinking water sources by commingling aquifers or allowing surface water to penetrate the borehole. I have firsthand experience in dealing with public health issues a few years ago in the fecal coliform outbreak in the Sun River Resort water system. The cause of the contamination was a failed valve that allowed surface water to mingle with the drinking water aquifer. Crews from the City of Bend responded to the situation and spent many long hours in the chlorination and disinfection of the Sun River distribution system with our specialized equipment. The outbreak occurred in the peak of the summer's tourist season and disrupted the resort area. Thankfully, there were no major health impacts from this event. We knocked on a lot of doors in the dark of night, and we were all impressed with the cooperation of the residents. Protecting public health is the primary function of municipal water providers, and having the knowledge that qualified inspectors are keeping watch on well drilling activities makes our life better and our customers' lives better. Oregon is noted for having the most complex geology in the country, and well logs can help us understand that environment. Well logs record the geologic strata found in the drilling of the well. Different rock types and the depths that they are found provide significant clues to the strength and the extent of the aquifer. By looking at well logs, the rock types, and the depth of water-bearing zones, geologists and hydrologists can evaluate the strength of the aquifer. In some parts of the state, groundwater is very limited in nature, and in some parts of the state, especially in the Upper Deschutes Basin, the regional aquifer is recharged every spring by snowmelt and is very massive. Well logs and the data generated offer very good value in helping to understand the natural systems society depends on. In the coming decade, reallocation, conservation, and the sound management of water resources in the state of Oregon and throughout the American West will become a very major issue, perhaps the issue in the future of our economy and society. The Water Resources Department needs sufficient funding to carry out its tasks in a professional manner for the greater good of the state. And I thank you for the opportunity to present the municipal point of view.
Thank you, Roger. Any questions of Roger? Very good. Mr. Patterson.
Chairman Jensen, fellow committee members. I'm Bob Patterson. I'm project manager for the City of Pendleton on various water supply projects that are currently underway. And I'm here to represent the city on this important issue. We do fully support the department in this fee increase proposal and would like to see this move to the Ways and Means Committee. On behalf of the City of Pendleton, we filed for a transfer of water rights to a new point of diversion back in late 2000 and early 2001. Those water rights have yet to go through the entire process for approval. We've worked with the department on legislation back in the previous session to help with the process and getting water rights transferred on behalf of the City of Pendleton. And we're at the point, we're 8 weeks away from wanting to move water at this new point of diversion, and we have yet to get a water right transferred there. So that's one aspect of our project. We'd like to keep the staffing at levels where we can keep working on getting these transfers approved, and I realize they have quite the backlog. The other aspect is the well construction issue. We are also looking at an aquifer storage and recovery project where we're going to take water in the winter and spring months, treat it through our new treatment plant, and store it in our existing wells. It's imperative to the City of Pendleton that the well inspector program continue and provide that assurance that any wells constructed in or around Pendleton or upgrading of Pendleton meet well construction standards. And most of the rest of the comments are the same as the City of Bend, so I'll keep it short and brief.
Thank you. Any questions of Bob? What's the holdup on the permits that are pending?
We're down to kind of the 23rd hour or the 11th hour, depending on what clock you're using. We're getting close to having those rights approved through the system.
Has that impeded or in any way slowed down the program to date?
It was impeded due to legislation we put in last session that was signed by the governor in mid 2001, which went into effect January 2002, and we're still waiting on those rules back to rulemaking through the department to be established. But we've started the process under those under the statute that was approved to get going.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Then at this point, the next persons we would like to hear would be from the department itself to explain the intricacies or complexities of this bill. So Paul Cleary and Adam Sussman, please.
Thank you, Chair Jensen. I'm Paul Cleary, Director of the Oregon Water Resources Department. And with me is Adam Sussman, our legislative liaison. We've got some other staff members in the audience as well, in case you get in any detailed questions that we can't respond to. I would follow up Mr. Patterson's comment about the transfer. You'll recall last session we passed a bill to allow transfers of point of diversions that may injure other water rights, particularly in-stream water rights, as long as there's a consent to injury. And I understand from talking with Tom Paul that we're working with ODF and W. This is the first one that involves that bill, and they're reviewing it to give us that consent to injury. But we anticipate we'll be able to meet their time frame within that next 8 weeks. So I guess that's an example of what we try to do throughout the department, and that is help people solve their water supply needs. And with that, I'll start off testifying on the bill in front of you, which was developed by the department in conjunction with our commission, our stakeholders, introduced at the request of Governor Kulongoski, and is incorporated into the governor's balanced budget recommendations. This bill was developed to provide the department with the financial wherewithal to perform our major function of helping people solve their water supply needs with new surface and groundwater development, while at the same time protecting existing users and protecting the resource for current and future generations of Oregonians. Our fees are established in statute, therefore we have to come from the legislature to request any modifications to them. We've got written testimony and three different detailed attachments. People often want to know, what does this really mean for different types of users, different types of applications? So we tried to give you as many numbers as we could in terms of that. This bill would ensure that the department's got adequate resources to handle both today's workload and increasing challenges of meeting new demands. You'll recall when we appeared before you and gave an overview of the department, we talked about how in the last decade we've had about a 30% increase in the total number of water rights that we administer statewide, about 19,000 new water rights. At the same time, we've had about a 10% decrease in our total staffing. So key for us, obviously, is finding ways to handle additional workload in that kind of environment. The bill would increase current water right transaction fees and proposes fees for several activities that are currently exempt from fees. Process with no cost. It also increases the well construction start card fee, which, as you heard earlier, supports a critical program of ours that ensures high quality of Oregon's aquifers and protects public health, safety, and welfare. Obviously, processing new water rights and transfers of existing water rights in a timely and efficient manner is critical to Oregon's economic growth and recovery. We continue to have increasing costs associated with our processing. We've got decreasing state revenues. We've got increasing competition for the general fund. When we had discussions regarding our start card fee and our general water right processing fees during last year's Ways and Means Subcommittee presentations, we were encouraged by that subcommittee to start working with stakeholders to address this through some kind of modification of our fee structure. And so that's what we're back in front of you on. We're looking for to drive a greater proportion of our total program funding from fees, while obviously at the same time pursuing process streamlining and cost containment opportunities wherever they may arise. We have to do that regardless of what our funding is, just because of the fact that we've got this convergence of increasing workload and decreasing staffing. Under our current fee structure, about 75% of water right processing costs are paid by the taxpayers through the general fund, 25% by the applicant. Fees support about 7 out of the 12 staff that we have that process water right applications. And I might reiterate that the kind of permits that we issue are perpetual in nature and provide a substantial increase in the value of properties that have water rights attached to them. For example, the difference between dry land acreage and irrigated acreage can be $3,000 an acre or more. And we also see substantial increases in industrial, commercial, and residential properties that have water rights attached with them. In terms of our water right transfers, we've been working hard to streamline our transfer application process. Even with that, as you heard earlier, transfers are becoming an increasingly necessary tool in order for us to meet new water demands, because Oregon is catching up with the rest of the West in terms of being a fully appropriated state. Most Western states, all of their action, for the most part, has been in transfers or trying to find ways to increase storage. Very few new water right applications in states that are fully appropriated. We've got a current backlog of about 700 transfers, and that's a significant concern to the department. This bill and the department's budget would provide two additional FTEs to work on transfers. Right now, we've got a complement of with both our Salem workforce and people in the field doing this as part of their job of about six FTEs that work on transfers. So we would have about a one-third increase in the number of people processing transfers. Currently, transfers applicants pay only about 20% of the actual cost of processing those applications. So what are we looking for? What's our overall philosophy? We want to better link the benefit of water right permits to their processing cost. We want to maintain our public service capability for water right processing positions funded by application fees. We want to add resources to address the water right transfer workload. And we want to add resources, one additional FTE, to address workload associated with our water conservation and water management conservation plan support, our allocations of conserved water projects, and our in-stream leasing program. I might point out that in-stream leases are one of the activities that currently are processed at no fee, and this bill would impose a fee on those activities. Specifically, it would increase the statutory fees for most water right transactions, including transfers, water right permits, applications for small ponds, extensions, and protests. Impose a fee for the first time on in-stream leases, allocations of conserved water, and review of water management conservation plans. And we project that it would generate somewhere between $1.2 to $2 million in fee revenue over the next biennium, as compared to our current fee revenue for water right transactions of about $621,000. So approximately a doubling, more than a doubling in fees. Fee revenue. The other section of the bill, the start card fees, is something that the legislature authorized in 1989 to fund a statewide well inspection program. You heard earlier how important it is to have properly constructed wells to avoid contamination of groundwater or well interference with other well owners. Right now, prior to any construction or conversion of a well constructor has to submit a start card, give us notice that he intends to start that job, and a $75 fee. That fee currently supports 10.88 FTEs, approximately 11 positions, six well inspectors, and related program staffing dispersed through various agency functions. It was set in 1989, has not been adjusted since then. Obviously has been eroded by inflation. If you were to look at that and adjust it using the consumer price index, the current purchasing value of that is about $47. This is the fund that we are significantly concerned about, because under current projections, we're going to reach a zero balance in our start card fee fund in September of 2003. Meaning that by the end of this summer, we will no longer have the ability to provide oversight for well construction and assure that they're properly constructed to protect public health, safety, and welfare. So the proposal is to increase the start card fee from $75 to $125, and also require a fee for well deepening. This would generate an additional $670,000 a biennium. Currently, the fee generates about $870,000 a biennium, so less than a doubling of the revenue there. Importantly for this program, this bill also provides real clear legislative direction on how we're supposed to allocate that money. That's been a concern of well constructors since the beginning of this program. No less than 75% of the fee revenue could be spent for well inspection. No more than 5% for well inspection related administrative support, and no more than 20% for our technical and information services related to well inspection. So with that, we know we've got a number of people that are interested in testifying on this. We anticipate that you'll continue to hear both support, and you'll probably hear some concerns as well. We are committed to working with our stakeholders to address their concerns and ensure that they get the biggest bang for their buck in our programs, and we would request that you move the bill out of committee with a due pass recommendation to Ways and Means. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cleary. I'll accept any questions, but before you ask them, let me ask you if maybe you would be more comfortable hearing all of the rest of the testimony and then bringing the department back to answer questions at that time. But if anyone has any questions they want right now, why, please.
Just a couple of quick ones.
Fine, thank you.
Paul, two questions. Of all the fee increases, how much total fee increase are you talking about? All of them together.
All together, if we're bringing in, let's use the low end on the application fees of about $1.2 million for applications and transfers, and let's round the start card to say $600,000, $700,000, you're looking at about $2
million. Not too much.
Right.
And
our general fund budget is somewhere in the range of $22 million or so. So fees would then represent close to 10, 11, 12% of our total funding, whereas right now they're about 7%.
Well, and one last question, Paul. I'm looking at your in the governor's budget on page F29, your budget here.
Right.
And I'm not seeing where these fee increases are reflected in the numbers here.
In the balanced budget request, I know they are. They've been incorporated. It's, you know, obviously the policy option packages. If you're looking at a current law.
Well, I'm looking at the 0305 governor's balanced budget,
right.
And I'm not seeing any increases in any category of that magnitude. So what am I missing here?
I'd have to take a look at that, and we'll get an answer back to you.
Why don't you guys do that? Maybe
we'll
talk about it a little bit later. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that.
Sure. That's fine, Representative. Thank you.
We'll be available.
We assume you're not leaving our...
No, sir. This is our most important bill.
Okay. At this point, we would ask Gail Andrews from Oregon State University, and if I could bring a couple of others, Gene Wilkinson from Oregon Farm Bureau, I think, and Christina McNitt from Oregon Water Resource Congress, up to the thing, and we'd like you to go ahead, Gail.
Hi. Mr. Chair, committee, thanks for giving me the opportunity to speak today. My name is Gail Andrews, and I work at Oregon State University as a water quality educator. But the first thing I need to make clear is that Oregon State University and OSU Extension Service do not have an official stand on this bill. This is my own opinion. And through my capacity working at Oregon State University, I coordinate the Oregon Well Water Program, which has as its goal to educate rural homeowners who get their drinking water from the groundwater through wells how to protect their drinking water resource. And just for perspective, we're talking about 400,000 households in the state serving 1 million people. So it's not an insignificant part of the state. Most of those people pay a well contractor to drill a well. They are assuming that from then on they can pump our wonderful safe groundwater and have a safe drinking water supply, which in most cases is true. Unfortunately, if there is a problem with well construction, their well hole itself can introduce contamination into their drinking water supply, and their investment in their homestead is for naught. They do not have a safe drinking water supply. additional risks are private well owners don't test their water on a regular basis, like weekly or quarterly, like public water systems. So private well owners with a contaminated well that's a result of poor construction could drink a contaminated water source for a year if they follow my recommendation of testing once a year, but more realistically, 4 years, and have accumulating health effects and not be aware of it. So we're looking at health risk, we're looking at medical expenses, but additionally, their well can contaminate their waters, the water of their neighbors, even if their neighbors have a properly constructed well. I've dealt with neighborhoods where there's multiple contaminations from an individual well. When this happens, it's a real financial drain on the family. It is a drain on state resources because people call me, they call the water resources, they call DEQ. Troubleshooting really, it doesn't happen that often, but troubleshooting is fairly expensive. And it's just a major frustration. People miss time from work trying to get a safe drinking water source. Ideally, all the wells would be constructed properly and we wouldn't have this issue. But I know that's not the case, and I know that well contractors know it's not the case. I've sat in meetings on committees with well contractors where they say that they're aware that the inspectors may be coming, and even though they're very conscientious and do a good job, knowing that there's the potential of being inspected helps them take that little extra effort and not compensate at the end of the day and leave the job a little bit early. And I've also heard them say that not all well constructors are equally capable and conscientious. And my clients, the only basis they have for selecting a well contractor is the low bid. And if there's incentive to cut corners and submit a low bid and no checks and balances on that with construction, I'm concerned about the risk to the aquifer, and I'm also concerned about the health risk for my clients. And as a taxpayer, I'm concerned about the cost that it's going to take to remediate these problems. So for that reason, I feel it's very important that we maintain the well inspection program as we have it. And I've given some thought to this as a homeowner that may have to pay the extra $50. How would I feel about this? And I looked at the typical cost of a well that may increase the cost 1 to 5%, which in my mind is not a large percentage of the cost. And if you look at budgets of households when they're drilling a well, my guess would be they have no idea what part is the fee, what part's the travel, what part is paying for the casing pipe that goes down the well, and what is for labor, and that if the additional 1 to 5% is across the board, there's no real inequity in the industry. So I really encourage you to consider the increase in the start card fee. Thank you.
Any questions? Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Yeah.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jean Underhill Wilkinson. I'm an Associate Director for Governmental Affairs for the Oregon Farm Bureau. Oregon Farm Bureau represents thousands of members who irrigate and are dependent on irrigation to sustain their operations. And given the economic status of agriculture nowadays, any additional costs serve as a burden on many of our members and cut into very narrow profit margins or non-existent profit margins. So they tend to be very skeptical of fee increases such as those that are laid out in this proposal, especially when those fee increases propose doubling of fees essentially across the board. On the other hand, we often hear complaints about the process of the Water Resources Department and the backlog of applications they have and the trouble that they have in getting through those applications in a timely way. So I think that some fee increases are probably appropriate and necessary so that the Water Resources Department doesn't continually go into sink into a financial strain. But I think the agriculture industry needs to make some judgments about what fee increases might be appropriate and necessary so we can create a balance between what would be acceptable for the agriculture our association's memberships and what the needs of the Water Resources Department are. So, Mr. Chair, I would appreciate it if you would encourage the agriculture players to get together. I don't mind if this bill moves out of this committee to go on to the next step in this process, but we need to get together, and I'd appreciate it if you would encourage the Water Resources Department, and I'm sure they'd be willing to work with us in providing us with any additional information that we may need so that we can make our judgments and come to an agreement amongst the ag industry as to what fee increases might be reasonable and acceptable, and so that this process can move in a smooth way. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jean. Any questions of Jean? Thank you. Christina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Christina McNitt, and I'm representing the Oregon Water Resources Congress, which is a voluntary statewide nonprofit association of water-related districts authorized under Oregon statutes to include irrigation districts, water associations, and water control districts. Other members include farming operations and businesses that irrigate, affiliated companies, individuals, and associations. As customers of the Oregon Water Resources Department, the Congress would like to state for the record that our experience with the department has been one of consistently seeking win-win solutions to a variety of complicated and sometimes very emotional issues. The Congress also acknowledges that the department has increasing responsibilities to accomplish using a smaller amount of resources, and we appreciate the efforts that the department continues to make to serve its constituency. I'd like to reiterate the fact that Director Cleary shared earlier about a 30% increase in transactions with a 10% decrease in staff. For the committee's background, the Congress is not yet ready to take a position on House Bill 2268. However, we're actively supporting the department as it continues to work with our members to evaluate the services and the increased fees proposed in this bill. A few points of discussion would include, for our purposes, assurance that the increased fees actually accomplish the associated work, establish a concrete measurement of outcome, including timelines of transactions, fees that produce FTEs that are dedicated to outcomes related to the specific activities for which those fees pay, provision that increased fees are not used to backfill any general fund dollar reductions, and finally, exploration of dedicating the funds raised from the fees and the interest to the department rather than being continuously appropriated through the general fund. In closing, the Congress would urge the committee to keep House Bill 2268 in play as a viable piece of legislation, and we would be supportive of its progress to the Ag and Natural Resources Subcommittee of Ways and Means, where further discussions along these lines can continue.
Thank you. Questions of Christina? Thank you very much, Lee.
Thank you.
We have Katie Fass and Paul Eckley, is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, Chair Jensen, members of the committee. For the record, Katie Fass, representing the Oregon Cattlemen's. We are here in opposition to the level of increases that are seen in this bill. Our industry, as well as much of the agriculture industry, is in an economic crisis. And the use of water is, and our water rights are part of economic development for our industry and for the state as well. A 100% increase on the majority of the fees is a large impact to our industry as well. The department states that an average application fee is $610, while the department is contributing $2,200. It does not look at what the applicant is doing to get to that point, what the applicant has possibly spent in consulting fees on their own time and process in pursuing a application. We are also, though, concerned with the backlog that is taking place at the department, and would be willing to work with the department and other groups to see how we can address the backlog issue without doing a 100% increase. and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Katie, just as a point of observation here, this is a policy committee, and the amount of the fee increase ultimately will, if there is a fee increase, ultimately will be the jurisdiction of the Committee on Ways and Means. And, you know, we would like to ensure that you're aware of that, and we're concerned about the policy issue specifically here, not the dollar issue.
I understand that, Chair Jensen.
Thank you, Katie. Yes, good morning.
Morning. Chairman Jensen and members of the committee, my name is Paul Eckley, and I'm the Operations Services Manager with the City of Salem Public Works Department. Address is 1410 20th Street here in Salem. We're the system that brings you the water you're drinking today, unless it's in a bottle. And I did want to say amen to Roger's comment about the snow. We're all appreciative of that. Hopefully it'll make an easier summer for us. I'm here today to, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of the well inspection program of the Water Resources Department. And I'd like to share with you two programs that the City of Salem has that takes advantage and benefits greatly from the well inspection program. One of them is our aquifer storage and recovery system project, and the other is our development services section within the Public Works Department. Salem has built an ASR system. Bob mentioned that the City of Pendleton is also looking at building a system similar to that. Our system was built in the late 1990s to provide additional source of water for our customers during emergency situations and also during the summer peaking season. Salem has built four municipal wells. The well field is located in South Salem, actually in Woodmansey Park. The water is stored by gravity out of our distribution system and then pumped back out. Total capacity is about 9 million gallons a day. And to date, we've stored about 350 million gallons that we've used. The ASR system has been used each summer for customers within the City of Salem. Specifically, it was used during the 96 flood, during the drought of 2001. And it's going to be counted on a lot during the next two summers while we take a large open reservoir offline to reconstruct it, our Franzen Reservoir, a 100 million gallon reservoir. Salem has invested over $5 million to build the ASR system, and the well inspection program has been very instrumental in protecting the quality of that water. We've developed a wellhead protection program for the ASR system. And as you know, I'm probably preaching to the choir, that the contamination of a developed groundwater source can be ruinous and make it very impossible to continue using the water. One of our best management practices that we've developed to protect the aquifer has been to locate private wells within the aquifer zone, and to ensure they were constructed properly and not to contaminate the ASR aquifer. The ASR zone, the aquifer zone in South Salem, extends from about where Liberty and Commercial Street comes together, there by Izzy's, south to about Kubler Boulevard. It's about a 1 or 2 square mile area that we've got. And in fact, we've discovered there are over 100 private domestic wells within that zone that were built probably years ago by people who had individual homes before they connected to the City of Salem's water system. Each one of these wells can be a potential source of contamination, and I would just say can be. Secondly, Salem is preparing a program that we started this year to work with people who have private wells to, one, let them know. A lot of people don't even know they have a well when they buy a house in that area. They're connected to the city's water system. Two, if they're interested in getting their well abandoned, the city's going to be assisting them. We haven't really fleshed out the extent of the assistance, but we are going to be assisting people with getting those wells abandoned. And three, if they want to reconstruct the well and bring it up to current standards by the state, we would assist them with that also. And again, we don't know the limit of that assistance. We have worked really close with the Water Resources well inspection staff to get this program moving, to find out the wells in that area. The second program, as I mentioned, is our development review section in Public Works. This is the group that works with private property owners that come into the Salem that want to either build a home, a subdivision, build some apartments, a commercial building, or a shopping center. and they work through getting the system properly designed. Many times when a development does come in, it is discovered that there are older private wells on the property that the owner wants to develop, and the development services people work very closely with the water resources inspection staff to ensure that if wells are discovered, the extent of the wells, the location of the wells, the date they were built, the construction standard of the well, and if the developer chooses to abandon that well, that they are properly abandoned. And that's a permit. That's generally a permit requirement from the city that those wells are abandoned properly before the development can proceed ahead. A couple practical examples we wanted to point out. Out in South Salem and along Barnes Road, some apartments wanted to go in, and it was discovered that older homes used to be in that area. There was about 4 to 5 older domestic wells that were discovered by the owner as the property was being developed. And I know that the developer and the city staff and the development review section and the water resources inspection program staff worked very judiciously in getting those wells abandoned in this case. And I wanted to point out, too, that they also worked with people in the neighborhood, and they discovered that some of them had some wells themselves that they weren't even aware of. So it was very interesting. The second one is a deeper well that was discovered that actually penetrates down into the zone, the aquifer zone, about 300 feet down that the ASR zone is at. And that was a well discovered along Liberty Road. And through quite a bit of correspondence and some nudging from the Water Resources Department, that owner finally decided to have that well properly abandoned, which eliminates another point, potential point of contamination for our ASR system. So without blundering on here further, in summary, just wanted to say we do work, our staff have worked very closely with the well inspection program staff and water resources. And, you know, one of our key goals, although most of our water, as you're aware, comes off the North San Juan River, we do want to protect that ASR aquifer and ensure its quality into the future. So we do support the increased, the adequate funding for this program. Just wanted to say thank you for this opportunity, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for him? Thank you very much. And at this point, we have Jerry Schmidt, Malaya Capolis. Is that Capolis? Excuse me. And could I ask Mark if he'd come up too with them? Jerry, and if you'd like to lead off?
Roll off. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Schmidt. I'm here today representing the Oregon Groundwater Association. I've kind of laid out some of our issues surrounding this bill. Specifically, we're making a reference to a discussion of the Start Card Fund, which was created in 1989. It was subsequently changed in 1993 with the introduction of House Bill 3456, which allowed a one-time raid of the Start Card Fund to be used for computerization of the department's records concerning groundwater and well logs. That particular legislation was endorsed by the Oregon Association of Realtors and ourselves with an effort to try and simulate that data so that it had access to the general public and for the people who were using that mechanism before. If you wanted to come in and look for a well log, you had to come into the department and hand look through thousands of records to try and figure out where wells were located. To the department's credit, they have established now a computerized system which allows access into the system where you can computer search by township, range, and section and get a lot of information which was not available before. Our concerns are basically centered on the process and some of the policy issues, and we've been working with the department trying to iron out some of these issues. When this particular legislation was prompted back in 1989, one of the assurances that the industry had from the department was when we created this fund, we would do two things. One is we would dedicate this fund specifically for well construction. Number two, we would try to keep compounding construction issues by negating the ability of local governments to tack on their own well construction charges. So the effort of that particular legislation was to say, okay, we do need a well inspection program. The industry is very supportive of it and have worked strongly to make sure that this works. That's one thing. Number two is that we don't want to have 36 different sets of regulations when, in fact, groundwater is a unified statewide concern, doesn't know political boundaries. So we wanted to make sure there was a unified regulatory approach. There's been some problems between the departments and ourselves. One was a lawsuit that resolved itself in Jackson County. That particular lawsuit was a suit between Ashland Drilling and the Jackson County. The issue there was the local governments were adopting local ordinances to cover well construction and well location. Our contention was that the department on the side was promoting this activity and that, in fact, there were some problems about how we go forward with this. Since then, I hope all these issues have kind of worked themselves out. We're working with the department to try and make sure that we're all on a uniform approach and we're working together as a central body. Why I bring this up, I want to just relay to you folks some of the underlying tones and concerns the industry has with the department. We're definitely trying to work together because this issue of groundwater protection is one of our paramount concerns, and we want to make sure that the people using groundwater plus the public have access to it in a safe and proper manner. Now, the further discussion of the policy issues, we're concerned that when you start a dedicated fund, that indeed it remains dedicated for the purpose that the legislature set it aside for. The department has gone a long ways about trying to answer some of those concerns by changing some statutory provisions in the bill to set some sideboards about how they use the money within the fund. I don't have uniform agreement among my members that this has satisfied all their concerns, so we're continuing to work with the department to make sure that these issues are resolved and that we can all come on board and support the department and support the whole issue. So with that, I gave you some information. Most of this information is from the department itself. Depending on which graph you use and how the figures work out, it sometimes doesn't look quite the same, but these are the department's figures. They're not mine, and I merely just Xerox these things to it's their graphs, and I want to make sure that I'm not saying that this is what I believe, that this is what the department believes. So my concern is that we solve some of these issues and make sure that our policy direction from the legislature is being adhered to, and we can move forward and come up with some type of resolution. And with that, I'll pass that on to Mr. Simmons.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Mark Simmons. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Association of Nurserymen today, and I want to thank you for providing us this opportunity to comment on the bill before us today. We recognize and appreciate very much the essential nature of the services that the Water Resources Department provides to all of us. We all benefit, and would like to offer qualified support for the bill before us and the proposed fee increases. The start card, we would support that, but we want to be assured that all these wells will actually be inspected. And when new wells are going in, we want to know that the job is being done on a systematic and methodical manner. The other fee increases need to result in timely service, and we would like some assurances that will be the result. We do not want to see fee increases, fee increase dollars end up being backfill for general fund that gets removed because the fee is put in place. And we would also like to see a sunset on any new fee increase. So with that, we'd be happy to participate in further discussions on this legislation, and thank you for your indulgence this morning.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate that. It's kind of a different experience here.
It is. This is my first opportunity in this new capacity to testify before a committee. I'm honored that it's before your committee.
Thank you.
Very much so.
Ms. Kapelas?
Hi. My name, Chair, committee members, my name is Malia Kapelas. I'm a registered geologist in the state of Oregon. I'm also a certified water rights examiner. I'm chair of the state's groundwater advisory committee. I'm also a member of the START card committee that was reviewing the proposed fee increases for the START card. And I'm also a member of the legislative committee with the Oregon Groundwater Association. And because of all of those multiple affiliations, I think at this point I'm going to say that I'm presenting my own personal opinion here and not here representing any one of the multiple capacities that I do fill. First, for the record, I would like to state that I think enforcement does provide a valuable public service. Water Resources is working hard to continue to improve its effectiveness and its efficiency to provide a better public service, and I think for that they should be commended. I would also like to say that enforcement is going to have a much greater role to play in the future than it does now, because there are more and more issues coming up where well construction plays a critical issue. And that would also include transfers and trying to determine if we're in same source, and also in well deepenings. And that's why why well deepenings are being added, because that's one potential area where we can have commingling wells, and that's an area where enforcement is not currently being funded to look at. So to continue on, I would like to say that I do think that there needs to be some type of increase to account for inflation that has accrued since 1989. As Water Resources pointed out, there has not been a fee increase since it was started, and inflation has been eroding away at this fee every year. In addition, as budget cuts have taken their toll from the general fund, the department has had to go back to the START card and try to fund more and more of its enforcement activities from the START card fund. That has also had an impact on the availability of funds that needs to be considered. And that also brings up the concern that Oregon Groundwater Association and Jerry mentioned, is that we want to make sure that the START card fund fees are being used for enforcement activities. In response to that, Water Resources has placed the sideboards on them, and I think that's a great step towards addressing those issues and concerns. With that, I would like to add one more comment. I noticed Water Watch's protest, and they are protesting any fee increases that would have a direct impact on them. For the record, I would like to state that Water Watch's protest tends to be one of the main cost increases for Water Resources to process water rights, and I think it's only fair that they should be bearing part of that burden of the increased cost that the department has to encounter when a protest is filed. Having a fee for protest restricts the number of protests, or it serves to limit them to protests that are, I would say, valid or more applicable. It tends to eliminate the people who just want to protest on the principle of not in my backyard. At least a fee makes somebody think twice before they protest and starts the department incurring potentially unnecessary charges to deal with that protest. And at this time, if any committee members have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions? Thank you all very much. Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate your being here.
Thank you, Chair Jensen.
At this point, we'd like to bring Water Resources back to the table, if we could, and keep my promise of having questions for them before they're through. Representative Shoffler.
Thank you. These funds that we're charging, the fees for inspections, I'd like to see them used for inspections too. And I don't think we should be charging water users to shore up some other government project or anything, because I just don't think it's fair to water users.
Right.
Will this money be used for, and will you be able to do timely inspections if you get this extra fee?
Chair Jensen, Representative Shoffler, I think we're talking about the START card fee, with the well inspection program, and the START card fee is a dedicated fund outside of the general fund, so the interest earnings on it go back into that fund, and it can only be used for the functions associated with the well inspection program and with the sideboards that we're setting up in this statute. The guarantee is that 75% of it goes into the actual on-the-ground well inspection, and then the technical support for that well inspection, the hydrogeologist that is able to answer and review and answer questions about is there commingling, the data entry for this, our what we call our grid system, our groundwater information database, which, as you see in our statements, has some 300,000 well logs in it, and gets a number of several hundred thousand hits a year on our website. So it's all dedicated to that well inspection program. And we're not looking at that in terms of any kind of backfill for anything else. So I think that's the assurance there.
Thank you.
And you're right. The well inspection program is critical. What we try to do is inspect a minimum of one out of every four wells. We do a real good sampling technique to make sure that we're capturing representative well drilling, and we focus on areas where we've got the biggest concerns to make sure that we're getting the biggest return for our field effort.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a lot of questions, Paul, but I'll try to keep them focused because I know we'll probably have a work session on this. But I'm just trying to understand some of the information that you've presented to us. First of all, I want to ask about, there was a comment about the protests from one of our former witnesses that said that the majority of protests were from third parties. However, on the sheet that you provided to us, it's titled just Water Right Activities, about the fifth bullet down, it said here that in 2002, approximately 7% of water right applications were protests. Of those protested, 72% were protested by applicants, and 28% were protested by third parties. Can you explain that? And the question I have is, does that mean that an applicant is protesting your decision on a water rights, and doesn't that mean they're paying twice?
Representative Jensen, or Chair Jensen, Representative Dingfelder, the applicant doesn't pay a separate protest fee, and you're right, they are protesting the initial proposed final order of the department, the conditions that we may have imposed on the on a water right, what we've done in response to the public interest review and so forth, and then we basically go through our alternative dispute resolution process aimed at resolving those protests, and for the most part we're able to resolve them without going into contested case hearing, but there are a few that go to that. But the applicant doesn't pay a separate fee. This is only for third party protests. Their ability to protest is rolled into their application fee.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. I have a follow-up on that, Mr. Chair. And when I'm looking at the chart that you have on the current fees and proposed adjustments, so can you explain to me the difference between the protest on a water right application and any other protest? And I can guess that might be on a transfer versus a new permit application. But if you can help me understand that, I appreciate it.
Chair Jensen, Representative Dingfelder,
on the chart, and it's listed, and it doesn't, oh, page 2, and the...
Go ahead.
It's section 536.050.
Right. Yeah. Right. Chair Jensen, Representative Dingfelder, the cost...
For the record.
For the record, Adam Sussman, Water Resource Department. Thank you. The protest fee for a third party in a water right application setting is currently $200. and we're proposing to raise that to $250. All other activities of the department, water right transfers, as an example, would have a protest fee associated with them of $25 is what they have now, and we're proposing to raise that from $25 to $250, so all protest fees would be $250.
Okay, thank you. I have one more follow-up.
Please.
Then this is on a different issue. It's regarding, and we've talked about this before, your backlog on transfers. Two questions regarding that. One is, are you seeing a decline in new permit applications and an increase in transfer, basically an increase in the transfers? And if so, is there a possibility of shifting staff resources? So we're trying to address that backlog. I'm just trying to understand why we've had, and it says down here that you have 70% that have been in the queue for almost a year, and what you're doing to really try to focus on processing those.
Chair Jensen, Representative Dingfelder, the last page on Attachment 1 has a chart that shows our history of applications for permits received since 1989, and you can see the variation in it. Obviously, 2001, we had a spike up because of a drought year. I would expect we may be seeing another spike up this year as well, but it certainly trended down from the 91-93 period, but it's been pretty stable since then in terms of applications for new water rights. Applications for transfers have been increasing. I think we've got as well the bar chart attached to attachment 2 shows how we went from 97,228 transfers filed to 2001, again somewhat drought related, 340 transfer applications filed, now 319. But you can see, so it's there's been an increase in transfer applications. New water right applications have somewhat stabilized. Obviously, depending on drought conditions and growth opportunities, those are going to be influenced. So we're looking, what the transfer backlog is the one that's got us most concerned, because you can see that's a growing trend. And as those applications go stale, if you will, it makes it more and more difficult for us to process them. Now, a lot of the problem with transfers is they can be extremely complex. I should have brought a chart or a map of this one transfer that we got over for you, and maybe I'll send that over to you. You can see moving four or five different water rights, different priority dates, different stages of development, some of them fully certificated rights, so we've got a good survey on record, some of them still in the permit stage, so we basically have to go through a proof to the satisfaction. So transfers are much more complex to process than new applications for the most part.
I just have one comment to that. Is, have you considered some type of graduated fee? Because obviously it's you have a flat fee for transfers, if I'm understanding you right. And I would think that if you see an application that you said is going to take much more iterations, that's obviously costing more staff time. And if there's some way to look at a structure that reflects more clearly reflects the time that you're spending, that might be something you want to consider.
Chair Jensen, Representative Dingfelder, the current statute does provide for that. If you'll look on that chart of fees on page 4, in the second box there where it deals with water right transfers, you'll see where the application to change a right, you've got an examination fee currently of $200. We're proposing to go to $500. And then for each additional type of change, so if it's a change of point of diversion as well as a change of place of use, and then if it's a change of character use, what it doesn't reflect is probably the complexity of a combination of a number of different water rights, and again that stage of where those water rights are in their development. One of the biggest problems that we've got is the ones that are permits that we don't have certificate issued yet, proved to the satisfaction.
Okay. I have one last question, I promise.
That's fine.
That's great.
In-stream water rights, I will tell you I have a concern about that, having worked with landowners who are interested in getting more water in the stream for fish. And my concern about this fee is that it may discourage willing landowners who are interested in making sure that, you know, we get some more water back in the rivers.
Right.
So if you could comment on that, and then also, does this mean existing in-stream water right holders will be grandfathered?
You said one.
And
Chair Jensen, Representative Dinkfelder, what this is for is for the in-stream leases. The in-stream water right leases. Applications themselves are exempt from fee by statute. They're held by the department on behalf of the public. But the in-stream leases, we're seeing a dramatic increase in activity in in-stream leases. We've got in 2002, we had 148 active leases with about 230 cubic feet per second leased in stream. And this is one where we're trying to, again, in the governor's balanced budget, we've got an additional position that would be supported out of the fee revenue associated with in-stream leases in order for us to be able to handle this increasing workload. It doesn't help people to go out and try to work with landowners and encourage them to move water back in-stream if we can't process the application. So in general, we've had a number of discussions with the entities that work, the conservation interests that work with landowners, and while they're like anyone else, they'd like to get things free rather than for fees, they understand that it doesn't help if we're not able to actually process the lease and then move it in stream.
Thank you, Paul, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for indulging me.
Mr. Chair, I have one more, too, please.
And I have a question, too.
Yeah.
And you better finish with me.
I'll go back then to Representative Shoffler, and we'll start on that way.
Thank you. We're going to have a fun work session with you now.
Actually, we are looking at 5 minutes, so let's...
All I wanted to do was share. I would like to see where Mr. Representative Kropp's concerns. I'd like to see the reflection in the budget, too, of where this shows up
right.
In the governor's budget.
Right. Chair Jensen, Representative Shoffler, we met out in the hall with Representative Krupp, and we appreciate him bringing that up. What the governor's budget reflects is it establishes our expenditure limitation. So what that shows is the increase in expenditures associated with the current positions that are funded out of these other funds, as well as those three new positions. The revenue from both the start card fees and the application and transfer fees would go into these accounts, and there'd be a building up of a positive ending balance. So we can't spend, we don't have the authority under the governor's budget to spend all the revenue that we've got coming in. So it's a difference between expenditure limitation and revenue. And what we anticipate is that we'd be building a positive ending balance for at least three bienniums. That was where we went last time in 90. And there's a couple of charts in the attachments that show the ending balance that we've had both in the water right application fee and the start card fee. The application fee, we try to keep around $120,000 positive balance in there. We get real nervous when it goes below that. And I can tell you, last year, or 2001, when we were issuing drought permits, the decision was made that we would refund all the fees associated with that. And so we had to absorb all the costs. And it was about $100,000 in costs.
You've been cut off, Paul. Thank you. Paul, I agree with Representative Shoffler about the fees going indeed to the areas that they're meant to go to. But I also am appalled that 75% of water right processing costs are paid for by the general fund dollars. I guess coming from local government, where we're trying to make sure that there are user fees, that those fees indeed cover the cost of that processing, I guess I'm really shocked at that, and I'm wondering why that is. And I have another question after that.
Representative Tomei, Chair Jensen, when the fees were increased last in 1997, we got up to somewhere around 37% of the costs were paid by the applicants. We're trying under this bill to move it to it senses eroded to 25%. We're trying to move it to about 50%. There are some substantial public interest concerns that are addressed through that application process. So it is appropriate for the public to absorb through the general fund to absorb some of those costs. We're not doing this solely for the applicant. If we were, we wouldn't have all the protests from applicants.
Thank you, Paul. The other question I have, if I may, Mr. Chair, is regarding the protests on the second page of that you gave us, the protest fees. Some of the fees are going up, say, 10%, 50%. That one is going up tenfold. The other protests under 536.0501J.
Right.
Any other protests going from $25 to $250? And, of course, you've seen the letter from Kimberly Priestley from Water Watch being concerned about that. Do you have any response to that?
Chair Jensen, Representative Tomei, again, that's the protests primarily associated with transfers. And the idea was is that, again, transfers being real complex, resolving protests with them being complex, setting that fee at the same level as the application fee. It just probably was never, when they looked at it in 97, because it wasn't a water right application protest related, they didn't adjust it then. So it's never been adjusted since it was first put in statute. And that's the problem that we've got. We're not doing annual adjustments. We're doing these kind of steps every 3 biennium or 5 biennium or so.
That seems like a really big step.
And some of them go from zero to 250, and that's a big step,
okay,
too.
Okay, yes. Thanks, Paul. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Just as a comment, the chair may find that a rather small step. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just going to briefly ask you to answer some questions, if I could, Mr. Chair, and bring them back to us. It's not necessary for you to do them right now. First of all, in your start card fee fund, in attachment 3, you talk about how it has declined about 10% a year in terms of your fund balance. Give me a breakdown as to why that has occurred and why it will go to zero as attached on your chart here on page 2.
Okay.
On your other document attachment 2, you talk about the average fee for water right transfer processing and the average cost. And what I'd like to know, what are the details that go into your cost?
Okay.
How do you cost that out? And then if you have any comparisons as to what private enterprise charges or would charge for that same activity. In response to Representative Dingfelter's question about graduated fees, I'd like to have you consider the policy question for water storage. If you're going to go up from $10 per foot to $200 plus per for creating a pond, doesn't that, and I'm talking off-stream storage here now,
mm-hmm.
doesn't that create a tremendous disincentive for small ponds, which in some cases don't even cost $200 to construct at all? And lastly, on your water rights fees, you also have a forecast of those fees. Again, going down below that $120,000 balance, and give us a good rundown as to why you think that will happen. And with that, Mr. Chair, I want to compliment the department on doing a good job in a lot of ways. And you've got pretty good staff. You are reducing your FTE. I would like you, finally, to also give us a more updated budget document that reflects all of the fee increases and where, as you've described, where the additional money will be placed in that dedicated account and how much it will be and so forth, so that this simple farmer's mind can reconcile that with a visual. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Many of the questions and concerns that the chair might have had have already been addressed by either members of the committee or people testifying before us, and as a consequence, we'll kind of hold our questions. I'd like to ask that the department, get with the various groups, whatever their testimonies might or might not have been, and try to work through and resolve any of the issues that they had. And would like to have you, bring that and the solutions back to me before I bring this bill up for a work session, sort of thing. And I also would like to, ask the department to, I suppose, Tom would be the one doing it to, you know, get with the chair to talk about this too little, too much protest fees issue that we have. With that, I don't have any other questions that I want right now. We're 2 minutes over time. You all have done a marvelous job of moving this along very well, and I appreciate, you know, all of your input, all of your testimony. This is going to be a complicated tale, but as you're including a whole number of things in it, and we will be back, visiting this again with probably some more public hearing as well as possibly a work session. So with that, we are adjourned.
Thank you.